We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Have you heard of Gold Belly? I know it sounds weird, right? Gold Belly? Well, it's this amazing website that I order from now all the time, where you can get the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants all across the U.S. And it is perfect for game day, Valentine's Day, any other thing you have going on. Follow me on X and see my video of the Pat's cheesesteaks that I ordered. They were amazing. And my podmaster, Chris, he ordered a gluten-free cake from Daisy Cakes that he says was fantastic. It's for his son, who's on a gluten-free diet. That's the range we're talking about when it comes to foods you can order. Gold Belly has everything from iconic regional favorites to specialized options that you just can't find anywhere else. When you order from Gold Belly and then serve it at your get-together, people are going to say, oh my God, where did you get that? I can't wait to get some Lou Malnati's authentic Chicago deep dish shipped right to my door. And people will say, did you go to Chicago? Whether you're looking to turn game day into an unforgettable experience with friends or want to impress a loved one on Valentine's Day, go to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code ZABE. That's goldbelly.com, code ZABE, for 20% off your first order. That's Gold Belly, your game day go-to. Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Name, address, phone number, even details about your family. All being pulled from public records and the internet, and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Plus, they alert you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal tool. It's a full digital security suite. VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, and dark web monitoring for your social security number, bank logins, and passwords. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other services charge the same, but only cover one or maybe two areas. With Aura, you get all of it in one simple app. Right now, you can try Aura for free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. Check website for more details.
Third and six. Here comes the pressure. He's running away from it. Stidham running after the chains. And he dives close, but will be a yard short. Marcus Jones, one of those who cut off the angle, and now you got a big decision to make on fourth down. So early gamble here, assuming they're not just trying to draw him off sides. You got Lutz, who's almost automatic from inside the 50, and you could go up 10-0, or you could try to go down and take it right to him and produce a touchdown on this drive.
I mean, I might actually kick this because I'm like, we're talking about one of the best fronts and teams that stop in the run when they want to. However, Sean has always been very aggressive in these situations.
Vrabel hunkered down, hoping his defense is too.
Safeties are high, ready, but these guys are tight. Gonna be hard to run in the middle. Gotta throw it.
Oh, they're coming after him, and he is intercepted. Now incomplete, they'll call it. It would have only made a difference of a yard or two because they stop them anyway. So the Patriots take over on downs.
No one better situational football than New England. So prepared. Should have kicked that field goal like we talked about, I think.
This is the Zabecast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Monday, January 26, 2026, and Super Bowl LIX is set. It'll be the Seattle Seahawks against the New England Patriots. A staggering Andy Pollin, 15 Super Bowl appearances between the two franchises since 2000. An embarrassment of riches. The fourth trip for the Seahawks in that time and the 11th trip for good old Bob Kraft and the Patriots.
But it's only the second meeting, right, between the two of them?
It will be the second meeting, and I can assure you the replays of the Malcolm Butler INT will be enough to make you lose your mind in about 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, well, we'll probably get a healthy dose of Marshawn Lynch, too. You know,
oh, should God,
be
yes.
The ball.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Now, we're going to have storylines in this Super Bowl, but we have just concluded the championship games. Andy is up late on a Sunday night because, due to the snowstorm, you're not working tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm not going to risk going into work, you know, and the days of the station putting you up in a hotel, those days are gone.
Wow. Okay. And you can't do it from home. I guess you don't have the equipment.
I don't have the setup. No.
Okay. So, yeah. So your show is normally on 9 to 11.
Correct.
On 6:30, the Sports Capital, which is also on FM, right?
No.
I thought it was just okay.
I'm riding the old wagon train as far as it's gonna go. So it's AM radio and it's streaming.
You know, I've worked with you so long. I remember the days when you would brave snow and you would drive in your Honda Accord through all kinds of bad weather.
Yes, but that was when I lived in Rockville and I worked in Rockville. I live in Germantown now, and I work in Friendship Heights. So the schlep is a lot longer than it used to be.
Yeah, and the roads are actually quite terrible as this storm has just finished with us after a good, 6-7 inches of snow and about 3 inches of sleet. I don't think I've ever seen 3 inches of sleet in my life.
Yeah, I just checked outside. Now, we supposedly in Germantown got 9 inches of snow, but I haven't really seen the sleet yet.
What do you mean you haven't seen the sleet yet? It's all it's all day long is sleet.
No, it's more like snow here. I don't know why.
You didn't hear the pellets plinking your windows? Did you not go outside today?
I did. I shoveled. I shoveled in shifts. But the point is, I thought it was going to be more like wet stuff. I guess the freezing rain is not coming.
No, it's over, Andy. Do you know what sleet is? I don't even think you understand what sleet is.
I thought sleet was sort of that mushy stuff that comes down when the snow's over.
No. Sleet is little frozen pellets, the likes of which came down throughout our whole region all day today, starting about 9 a.m., and accumulated to the tune of 2 or 3 inches, which, again, in my entire life, being a weather aficionado that I am, have never seen accumulating sleet.
Yeah. Well, the worst I've seen was in Dallas. I had a spin out in an ice storm that was freezing rain. That's about the worst thing you could possibly drive in.
Oh, Dallas got it bad with this storm.
Other
parts of Texas got it bad, and there's lots of Tennessee's getting hammered with freezing ice, knocking down trees, power lines, you name it. Mississippi's gotten hammered as well. The funniest thing is you look at the map, Andy, Florida basically said, we choose not to participate in this nonsense. Basically, Florida, it's warm. It's like 80 down in West Palm, basically.
Man, that's the place to be.
Yes, it is. Yet we are here, Andy, in the place we love.
And you're still here.
And I'm still here.
Why are you not in Arizona? No bitching about the weather today? None? No?
I am going with my mom, but not until February, and it can't come soon enough. But yes, for now, I'm weathering the winter, and it's going to be a rough 10 days because we're not going to get above freezing again till Groundhog Day, where we'll all be rooting for Punxsutawney Phil to see his shadow or not see his shadow. I forget which one it is, but it's going to be a tough stretch of 10 days. Could be another snowstorm in between. So.
Okay.
It's like old school winter, you know? Yeah. It's like the winters we used to have making a comeback. Anyway, today was a very interesting day of football watching. One game that was a bit of a siege as the weather came in and the two defenses keeping each other in check. And then the night game was a true thriller, was it not?
Oh, yeah. And in both games, I think the losing coach screwed himself by not kicking field goals. I don't get it. Field goals are automatic these days, and they pass them up routinely, and it comes back to bite you. And Sean Payton had to know that the storm was coming. I mean, with all the weather forecasting we have these days, I mean, George Allen, over 50 years ago, when they played at the L.A. Coliseum, Super Bowl used to start at 3, so it was a noon kickoff in L.A., he was out there checking the sun for like 4 straight days to know the exact angle when the game was going to be kicked off. And here's Sean Payton in 2026, doesn't know the snow's coming. It might be a good idea to have some points and take a 2-score lead with a backup quarterback. Crazy.
I'm not as – everyone is now a – oh, I told you should have taken the field goal all along.
I felt at the time he should have taken it. It wasn't a hindsight. It made sense.
It was fourth and one. Right. And by the way, I did play before we started talking here. I did play the cut-up of Nance and Romo talking about it. Mm-hmm. And Romo – was not as firm as some people on my timeline claimed that he was. He said, I don't know. I think I might long pause, kick it here, and then explain why because of the Patriots' defensive front and their run stopping ability. But then said, but you know, Sean's always been very aggressive here. And so he sort of gave it a caveat. Like, I'm not disagreeing with it. I'm just saying he's aggressive. I wish analysts would plant their flag more, Andy, to say, nope, I'd kick this. Kick this, and here's why.
Yeah.
10-0 is good. Yeah, you're getting greedy for 14-0, but look, you're at the 14-yard line. If you convert this, it's still a hard touchdown. This Patriots D is really, really good, and you got a guy in there who's raw in Stidham. Kick the field goal. 10-0 will work. As far as the weather, I don't know how accurate anyone could predict the weather because it's Denver. Denver is one of the most notoriously fickle weather climates anywhere. So I don't know if they've got a staff meteorologist that says, definitely take the points now because it'll benefit you later. I don't think they expected Stidham to pull a bonehead play and try to double hand yeet the ball when he's about to get sacked.
Okay.
That was the disastrous play of the game.
But you also have to recognize that points are going to be a premium. Get them while you can. Like these coaches, they'll try and make up the 2 points on the 2-point conversion all the time, and then they fall further behind. Take the one. It's early in the game. You got more possessions coming. Why do you pass it up now?
I think fourth and one, which they were in, and it was a meaty one. Okay, so it was a big one, and they're not a tush push team. And they don't have their starting quarterback. I think with Bo Nix, it's far more defensible because Bo Nix can run. He's tough. He's a gamer. You can bootleg him out. Like, he'd be the guy I'd feel comfortable on a fourth and one.
Right.
But
so you agree with me.
Well,
kick it.
No, I think it was a tougher decision than people make it out to be. That's the thing. Because you weren't fourth and one at the 40. You were deep inside the red zone, but it was still going to be a tough touchdown, so you should have factored all that in. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'd kick it.
Yeah, well, you know, what did Spurrier teach us? Hindsight is
50-50.
50-50. God bless the old ball coach. Now, after the game, here's Sean Payton being asked about the decision. Let me go ahead and share screen so you can hear and see this. I am not at all sad that this sour-faced asshole is not going to be at Super Bowl week. Not that I'm going, but just not going to have to hear from him this week. Here's Sean Payton.
Well, we ended up in a 6-1 front. They ended up playing a heavy 6-1. There was a clock stoppage. So we had a nickel run called. And then I don't know if there was a timeout or they called one. But, it's a slipper naked that we've run pretty well. They played a 6-1 front with a kind of a 2-deep shell. So the run looked going to be hindsight. The initial sub run thought was a better decision.
Wow.
He throws out a bunch of technical mumbo jumbo to try to throw you off. It's a very simple thing. Either you go for it or you kick the field goal. 6-1 front, soft shell, crab cake mix, whatever. Kick the field goal.
Yes. How about the fact he didn't remember who called timeout?
Right.
You guys called timeout. That's what's crazy. I tweeted, the other Sean McVay, he'll remember a random play from a Thursday night game against the Jaguars from 2019 and exactly how many yards it got. This Sean can't remember who took a fucking timeout 2 hours ago. He might have been.
Jack Nicklaus can remember every shot he had in the U.S. Open in 1964.
You got to meet him with me and we interviewed him and it was absolutely one of the highlights of my career. Love that.
Can I tell the quick story about the most impressive part of that? You were telling us, the interview might go 10, 15 minutes, but
timeout. We were at a charity golf outing at Creighton Farms Golf Club in Virginia, Leesburg, Virginia. And that's a course that Nicklaus designed. He doesn't do many of these, but this one particular charity was very dear to his heart. So he showed up to do it. And their PR people allowed us as the radio station on 980 to go out there and to broadcast our show live and then interview Nicklaus. Go ahead.
Right. So that we were told, okay, we'll give you maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then we'll probably have to wrap it up. So we've gone at least 20, and I'm figuring, man, we're having house money here. And you told a story of him winning a long drive contest like 50 years earlier
at the PGA Championship.
Yeah, and I see him to start to fidget a little bit, and I'm thinking, okay, he wants to get the hell out of here. No, he's fidgeting to get a money clip out of his wallet to show you that that's what he won for winning the long drive contest 50 years ago. Blew me away.
And he was beaming as if he was a 14-year-old kid that had won that. I remember asking the question because I was looking at his Wikipedia page just for something else to ask him. I mean, I'm a golfer, so I should have plenty to ask Nicklaus about, right? But I came upon this thing that he apparently hit this drive that was a preposterous distance for 1972 length. And it was like 310 yards, and I didn't believe it, so I wanted to ask him about it. And sure enough, he kept that money clip with him. I was so happy and so proud to show it off. Yeah, it was great. That was when Nicklaus was just starting to make himself available to some other forms of media. Because he was, I don't want to say he was a recluse, but he wasn't really out there, So that was really cool. But anyway, I don't know how we got down this tangent. When it comes to Sean Payton, you mentioned all of his mumbo jumbo. You remember what he said earlier in the week to one of the reporters who tried to flip on him? Here was Sean Payton being the asshole that he is.
Green love back to this game, his ability to attack in the run games. How big is that, the timing of it?
Do you want him to attack downhill? Is that your, what do you know about attacking downhill in the run game? You don't know. All right, that's right. But have him attacking downhill. Okay. It's good to have a healthy Dre Greenlaw back in the game. Yeah.
Third quarterback.
That is sweet.
Well, I don't want to defend him, but having covered the Giants for a couple of years when Parcells was coaching the team, Parcells used to do a lot of that. And it was to keep you on your toes and, make sure that everybody knew that he was in charge. He used to manipulate the media. And then, he'd chew somebody out, and then he'd come back later, like in the media room where people are working, and he'd rub some guy on the back and talk about the Red Sox or something like that. It's a psychological game that these guys play.
I just find the whole fourth down thing, I think people are are not accepting the fact it was a close call. It was fourth and one. You have a chance to go up 14-0, two, a really big punch out of the gate, and you're down at the 14-yard line. It to me, it was closer than people would have given it, you know, credit for, I think, my opinion, but it turned out to be the thing that everybody is seizing on. They're not seizing on the fact that Stidham puked on his shoes with the yeet that turned into the easy touchdown the other way. It doesn't, people don't want to talk about that the game tying field goal was partially blocked. And so that would have made it 10-10. Who knows who could have moved the ball on that field anyway if it was 10-10, but we'll never know.
Right. The also on the puke on his shoes play, he made the one move that you can't make as a backup quarterback. You can not necessarily win the game for your team, but you can't lose the game for your team. And that's what he did.
Yeah. But that's that. And that's what you have to fear with a backup quarterback, even though they were full confidence and steady. And Stidham made a hell of a pass early to set up the first touchdown.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful pass.
But then the weather came in and it turned into the Battle of the Bulge. Ardennes, 1944. Did you ever watch Band of Brothers, Andy?
I did. I watched the whole series. Loved it.
Remember the portrayal of the Battle of the Bulge? The Battle of the Bulge in Ardennes, where they're hunkered down in the trees and they're freezing to death. They're getting shelled left and right around them. Oh my God.
They got dysentery for months. I mean, the stuff that those guys went through. You talk about the greatest generation. You can't beat that.
Yes, indeed. So other things from this first game was the challenge on fourth down on the tush push, where they went to the overhead camera, and it sure looked to me that Drake May was short. What did you see?
Yeah, I saw the same thing. And there's Peyton trying to get them to look at the overhead. I don't know. Did they look at it? And they still called it first.
Nobody knows what they looked at because the process is shrouded in mystery. We don't get to see all the angles. We don't get to hear what they're saying to each other about why they're making the call. Some guys, like Florio, Pro Football Talk, are banging the drum to say we need full transparency from the league. And I just laugh. I'm like, they're not going to give you that. This fucking league, in a million years, they're never going to let you hear what's going on inside those in the darkened, you know, NFL referee room upstairs in 30 Rock, wherever the offices are.
One thing they don't need is a ratings gimmick, because it doesn't matter if the game sucks. Doesn't matter if it's two small market teams. People watch.
Yeah, no, they don't. And then, of course, people were clowning on Gene Steratore because on the turnover that they had to fix after the fact, the whistle blew, but they had to fix it after the fact. Gene Steratore was like, no, that's a good call right there. And then they change it. And he goes, no, that's also a good call right there.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing with these TV refs, Andy? They used to be useful when it came to the very nuanced, arcane rules definitions, and they would help explain those. Now they just seem to exist to say, good job, great call, and then change their mind as soon as replay overturns it.
Could it be that when they get together with their former colleagues at cocktail parties, they get the cold shoulder and they don't like that, so they've kind of walked away from second guessing?
If it's not cocktail parties, there must just be a fraternity that says, you know what, I would hate it if one of the guys I used to work with was now in television. And he's all the time he's saying how much we fucked up and this is wrong. I will say, in that game, through three quarters, they had one penalty for 5 yards.
Yeah, isn't that something?
The league can turn the penalties up and down and on and off like a faucet when they want to. Because I believe in most regular season games, a ton of shit is called that would never be called in an NFC-AFC championship game, except for one thing, which was the taunting penalty on Woolen in the night game in Seattle, which was just probably the right call. I wouldn't have thrown the flag there. Huge difference. Might have made all the difference in who goes to the Super Bowl, but it didn't.
Right. I mean, he did it right in front of the referee, which didn't help him. And this year they really have turned up that call. That's being called than ever before. So I really wasn't shocked by it. It was a stupid thing to do, but it didn't seem to rise to the level of what it, you know, what it ultimately cost them. So,
all right. So the Patriots, they bottom out. They get Drake May with the third pick of that quarterback rich class. He may be the best of the three, although he didn't play really great in the snow up there, had more rushing yards at one point than passing yards. But then they, you know, they get a new coach in Jerod Mayo. They make Drake May sit for a while. Mayo did. They realize Mayo's no good. They say, get out of here. And they go get one of the best coaches in the league who was inexplicably out of work for a year after he got fired in Tennessee. Is Tennessee whiffing on firing Vrabel, who had taken them to, you know, playoff games and second round appearances, and I think won coach of the year at one point in Tennessee? Is Amy Adams Strunk firing him one of the biggest drop the bags ever when it comes to coaches?
Oh, I mean, in hindsight, obviously. I also wonder about this, that was that the guy that Kraft wanted all along, but because of the convoluted, first of all, he needed a lever to get Belichick out of there. So he had the coach in waiting. Then it's an African-American coach. So, you know, do you screw him over after you've made this deal with him as part of the Belichick succession to bring in Vrabel? I think Vrabel was the guy he wanted all along. And I wonder if Vrabel was doing still relatively well in Tennessee, might they have done a John Gruden and traded draft picks to get him? Because Kraft did that before. You know, he traded draft picks to get Bill Belichick out of New York with the Jets. Right. So
I don't know. I forgot that the Broncos traded a first and a second to get Sean Payton. I'd totally forgotten that until Nance dropped that during the broadcast. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Well, because he was still, even though he'd done TV for a year, I guess he was still under contract to New Orleans, right?
He was. Yeah. And then the Broncos gave up a haul of picks to Seattle to get Russell Wilson. And yet they've overcome those two things in a relatively short span of time. I'm not saying draft picks are overrated, but some teams seem to come back from squandering them a lot faster than other teams, right?
Yeah, that's true. And probably a good GM. Also, they hit on Bo Nix. You know, he was not, what, 10 late, overall? Something.
Was it that mid-first, I believe.
Yeah, so you get lucky. You get lucky there. But yeah, that really is a surprise. And, you know, Peyton, for all of his mishigas, is probably a good coach.
No, he is a good coach. He's just an asshole that I like to see lose. Looks like he's constantly sucking on a bag of lemons. So the Patriots are going to their 11th Super Bowl in the Kraft era. He is not yet in the Hall of Fame. Jerry Jones last went to the Super Bowl in 93 or 95, excuse me. He is in the Hall of Fame.
Because of the economic boom that he brought to the league. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. He showed the other owners how to make money. That's why they put him in.
Are you saying Kraft does not deserve to be a Hall of Fame owner?
Oh, I don't understand putting owners in anyway, unless it's George Halas who helped to start the league. To me, owners should not be Hall of Famers. That's not really something that you put them in. I don't think so.
So going to the Super Bowl, you don't think owners have a big hand in crafting an organization that wins? Because I do.
Right. But I don't see them in that, you know, Hall of Fame to me should be for coaches and players and maybe a few GMs in there.
What about broadcast?
That's a separate wing. That's not the one where they get the bus in there. The bus room, you know, where Madden says, oh, I bet when they turn out the lights, they talk to each other. You know, that room, like this, owners maybe should be in a separate wing, just like broadcasters are.
Okay, but you say you don't think they should be in, but there are owners who are in. So based on that, you need to more fully endorse your boy Bobby Handjob Kraft at the old Orchids of Asia Salon for the Hall of Fame. The dude just wins, and he knows how to get pussy that's a lot younger than he is. Although I don't think that eye surgeon that he was dating before is still with him.
No, I think he's married. He married her. That woman, they had a shot in the box, and he's sitting next to a woman.
That's right.
And clearly looks young enough to be his daughter. It's his wife.
Dana Bloomberg, that's right, was previously married to Myra Kraft, who on her deathbed helped, forge the lockout solution from 2010. Remember that whole narrative?
Oh, yeah. Jeff Saturday giving him a hug as he was getting fleeced.
Okay. You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Moving on to the Seahawks beating the Rams. It was a highly entertaining game, lots of offense, back and forth, a couple of stupid plays. The Rams punt returner who tried to field a punt while on his back, although at that point, I'm not sure he could have done anything, right? Because he tripped at the last second. Backpedal.
Just catch the ball. Catch the ball.
When you're falling and it's about to hit you on your back, what do? Try to move your body so it doesn't hit you?
But if your job is a punt returner and you spend a good deal of practice either with the jugs gun or the punter fielding punts, you should be able to field a punt in a game, right?
Yeah, you should. But, shit happens, right? What are you going to do? Smith and Jigba was sensational, and Packer fans losing their mind because the Packers drafted some stiff defensive end white guy, Lucas Van Ness, out of Iowa instead of JSN. And I just think JSN's so good in so many ways. The way he runs, his hands are amazing, his route running is elite, he's big, he's wiry, he's tough. These are the qualities that pro scouts should be able to see. And that guy should go a lot higher in the draft, if you ask me.
But, somebody will say, well, we looked at film from this game and he should have made that catch. Here's having worked with Mel Kiper, as I dropped the name here. And what he would say all the time is he'd say there's just too much time between the end of the college season and the draft. And what happens is they rethink it too many times. The draft. Yes. When they had wars with the AFL, the NFL used to hold its draft like in November, it was such a war that Al Davis signed Fred Biletnikoff under the goalposts after his last game. He didn't even take his uniform off. Now it goes to April, occasionally in May. You go through the combine, all the interviews, and, by the time you get there, you've changed your mind 400 times. So who knows?
Yeah. Sam Darnold's a great story. I'm happy for him. A guy who had pretty much been relegated to the trash heap of, he sucks. And, from what happened last year with the Vikings, all my Viking buddy Charch is devastated because, they got spooked by two bad games by Sam Darnold. They go, nah, he's no good. We got this young kid, J.J. McCarthy. We got to make room for him. Let's not offer a contract to Sam Darnold. But this is a great story. Further proof that you really can't bury players, Andy, until you've seen the whole movie, right?
Understand, but they already had J.J. McCarthy in the queue.
So
there's, well, yeah, but the draft investment in him was too high, and no. You can't have, well, that's not, no, Andy, I agree that's not the way it should be, but that's the way it worked.
But with the new contract structure for rookies, where a top quarterback, and McCarthy wasn't a top three quarterback, when you have those guys, they're affordable to let them sit on the bench. All you have to do is to be able to tell them to their face, sorry, kid, Sam Darnold just had one of the best seasons we've had at quarterback since Warren fucking Moon. So guess what? Yeah. You're going to sit another year. And they should have told him that. And
Green Bay can do that.
Might have been different. They should have eaten the pick. That's what the Niners did with Trey Lance. They took Trey Lance like fourth overall. He turned out to be a pumpkin.
But can you count on Mr. Relevant Brock Purdy being this good? I mean, they lucked out there.
No, but my point is, don't be so committed to a quarterback just because you took him high in the draft. When a established veteran like Sam Darnold is showing you, with the exception of the two biggest games of the year, which I know were a shit show, when he's showing you, I can do the job really, really well, tell the young kid who's not going to break your cap, shut up and sit down. It's not your time. The Packers did this with Jordan Love. It can be done. Teams don't have the balls to do it, Andy. Telling you.
Well, but in both the cases of Rodgers and Love, they were sitting behind Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Sam Darnold, God bless him, is not a Hall of Fame quarterback.
No, but that doesn't have to be the standard. You could say you're going to sit behind a veteran who lit it the fuck up for us last year. And we believe
he crapped the bed when it counted the most.
He did. He did. But, you know, you have to account for the fact that sports is hard. The other team gets paid too. And sometimes guys have a bad game. And maybe you don't run the ball enough. Seattle's a better running team, better defense than Minnesota had. So there's a lot that goes into it. But I'm happy for Sam Darnold. So Seahawks and the Patriots, and I believe the line is 3.5, 4.5. Let me go to scores and odds, Andy, because I know you're going to wager on the game. And when you do, please go to mybookie.com and use promo code ZABE, Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Okay. Super Bowl opening odds. You ready? What do you think it is?
I'll say Seattle by 2.5.
Here we go. It is pop-ups. How come we can't look up anything quickly on the internet anymore? Seahawks minus 4.5.
4.5.
Wow. Long. Okay. There you go. Okay. Mike McDonald, who is an outstanding head coach, is also a monster, Andy. You know why he's a monster? He admitted that he does not see his kid very much during the season. Did you see this little non-traversy?
Yep, I did.
Okay.
He says,
here we go.
Sees him on Thursday, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Vic Lombardi. This is not a flex. This is sad. Here he is talking about what he does during the season.
I'm here less, which is, I wish some of our coaches took that as well. But, you know, on Thursdays, you know, I don't get to see Jack throughout the week as much. So Thursdays, I try to get, which is today, I try to get home pretty quick to be with him for maybe a half hour, hour before he goes to bed. And then I got a setup at my house where I can go, and then I work on the game plan. But it's able to spend some more time at home and be with Jack. And also it kind of lets you kind of get away from everything and kind of see things from a different perspective.
An hour and a half?
Yeah, so it's been helping.
You monster! By the way, his kid is one.
Yeah, right.
One. This, yeah. The people that tweet to be like, look, I'm the father of the year. You're going to regret this. This is not proper life perspective. Shut the fuck up. You're going to be a parent to this kid all your life. And you're going to have oodles of time in the off season to spend quality time with him. Okay.
Exactly.
And he's one.
Right. What about the fathers who are deployed to Afghanistan for months and months? So maybe, you know, get over that. And it is interesting though, because it comes on the heels of the Kurt Cignetti. Well, I don't want my guys working late. You know, we do our practice hour and a half. We get it done. These guys, you know, so I think that people have used that. Well, look what Cignetti did. He had an undefeated season. He doesn't make his guys stay late. So whatever.
Yeah. All right. A couple more NFL things, and then we'll move on here. The Steelers are hiring Mike McCarthy. It is not going over well with Steeler Nation. His record, though, his record is virtually identical to Harbaugh's. You know that, right? John Harbaugh's. They're the same guy. Well, I wouldn't hire him either. Here's the dichotomy, though, in the whole perception of coaches. Harbaugh was considered the pick of the litter this cycle and got a massive contract, right? 5 years, $100 million. And McCarthy is seen as, this fat fuck again. Why is that when their win-loss, Super Bowl record, and everything else is very similar?
Well, because Harbaugh has only been fired once and McCarthy has been fired twice. And weight does have something to do with it. Yes, I think that's the case.
Yeah.
There is that.
Being
there's that
fat prejudice. And a character flaw. Even when you're a husky Pittsburgh guy. The other part of this is being criticized is the Steelers end of things. The way they went about hiring him made no sense whatsoever because they were going to look at a bunch of defensive-minded guys. They end up with an offensive guy without any other offensive guys that were in the interview cycle. They interviewed two other guys. That would be Brian Flores, who's suing the league and a former team. So he's kind of a he's kind of a nuclear property at the moment. And the other is Anthony Lynn, a longtime African-American coordinator who was not considered a serious candidate to get the job. Right. And then they're like, well, do we need any more interviews? And they looked around and said, no, let's just get McCarthy. He's from Pittsburgh. That's a lot of people thinking that they hired the Yinzer because it made him feel good.
Well, they did it with Cowher, but Cowher was untested. Look, they had a great formula. They hired three coaches since 1969, none of whom had been head coaches before. And it would seem like you would stick with that. And, you know, what you want is a younger Tomlin, a younger Harbaugh, which is what, you know, guys that what they were. They were coordinators who were ready to move up. I think Tomlin was only 35 when he got the job.
Younger is the point, though. This is McCarthy's last bite at the NFL apple, right?
Right. Look. Absolutely. Look.
He does complete the trinity of the Tiffany franchises in the league: Packers, Cowboys, Steelers. You can't look. That's chef's kiss of the highest tier of franchises, right?
When they hired Tomlin, it seemed like a foregone conclusion that Russ Grimm, also a Pittsburgh guy, was going to get the job, and they chose not to hire him. And it probably was the right move.
Because he's kind of big and he wasn't polished. He wasn't polished.
He wasn't polished.
These owners want podium guys. They want guys who win press conferences above all else.
Well, it's become more important than ever. It really has because that's how the league is done. It's all... You know, when I started going to covering football, like in the Oilers locker room, Bum Phillips would be standing next to a locker and the four or five people who were in there covering the game would talk to him. Everything's press conference now. That's all part of the well-oiled machine.
It is part of the job. And I do think it matters to a certain extent to give an aura that, look, we just lost three games in a row and things look like the season's going to shit. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to keep us together and we're going to figure out a way through this. That's the one area that John Harbaugh is excellent. John Harbaugh is sort of a CEO coach, is really good. Remember how badly they started the season? He didn't freak out and start blaming people or prematurely saying the season's over.
Yeah.
Remember
how about this?
Who was it for the Redskins that declared the season over? Is that Spurrier?
No, that was
Said, well, he wants to play the rest of the year.
He was going to look at guys for the next year. Here's something else. Do you think that they do think they can get another year out of Aaron Rodgers and having McCarthy come in
as well
might squeeze that out? Because what are their quarterback prospects? The draft doesn't have anything. what's in free agency?
Not only are the quarterback prospects thin, I really believe that many of these teams looked around at the coaching prospects and they're like, holy shit, we've really picked the bin clean. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the bread and the milk aisles at our supermarkets this week. Because there were 10 vacancies this year that ties for the most in a single offseason. Last year, Andy, there were 7. In 2023, there were only 3, but then in 2022, there was 10 again. Hmm. So 10 plus 3 plus 7 plus 10. That's 30 openings in 4 years. The whole league got flushed out with coaches in a matter of 4 years.
Yeah, well, it's also marketing, too. It's telling your fan base. Because, for a long time, before they had all these luxury boxes and all these add-ons for extra money, selling tickets was not a big deal. It's a bigger deal now because of the expense of it. So having a new coach come in, you're willing to pay off the rest. And like in the case of Harbaugh, he's got offset. So, you know, Steve Bisciotti's not on the hook for any more money. He got more than what he's getting in Baltimore with New York.
I guess. There were some real whiffs the last couple cycles on coaches. Nathaniel Hackett didn't last a season. Antonio Pierce, midseason. Frank Reich, midseason. Gerard Mayo, one and done. Pete Carroll, one and done. Houston, before they found D'Amico Ryans, went through David Culley and Lovie Smith in back-to-back one and done seasons, which is kind of nuts. Currently, we've got Saleh with Tennessee, Stefanski in Atlanta, Halfley in Miami, Minter will take over in Baltimore, McCarthy takes over in Pittsburgh, Harbaugh with the Giants. The remaining jobs are Vegas, Arizona, Cleveland, and Buffalo. Buffalo is the best fucking job, and I don't know who they're going to get.
Right, but also that's a job where you're supposed to get to the Super Bowl, and somehow, some way.
Don't you think if you're a young coach and you're looking at what's left, Vegas, Arizona, Cleveland, Buffalo, you would walk to Buffalo barefoot in the snow to get the job?
Yeah, but you got an owner who showed what a buffoon he was at the news conference the other day, and they talked to Philip Rivers. If they're talking to Philip Rivers, that tells me that they're not really a smart organization.
I know. You know, somebody said that should be called the Looney Rule, not the Rooney Rule. That every team should have to interview one non-serious potential head coach.
Well, the looniest coaching hire in recent years, anyway, was Jeff Saturday coming in at mid-season to replace Frank Reich, who had a long-term contract. Now, yeah. You know, was Jimmy Irsay a little bit, you know, drugged up when he did it? I don't know, but that didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't think they have any idea who they're hiring these days, and they're seemingly flipping through them quicker and quicker, at least the last 4 years they have. Let me rewind back to Monday real quick, and then we'll wrap it up here. Your boy had to have a night on Monday night as an Indiana fan to see his Hoosiers complete the mission to finish the deal, and it was very white knuckle at the end. How was Jeremy after the win?
Well, I didn't talk to him until after the game. I just texted him, but he was fortunate that his wife was at work, because he does get pretty emotional with the Hoosiers now. He lives in an apartment. I don't know if there are any complaints.
He didn't want to show his lovely wife his dark side of, God damn, what the fuck?
She's seen it. I think 1 year he had to make a New Year's resolution to be less engaged with the Hoosiers. But, you know,
why is your son's beautiful bride trying to change him?
Well, she's not trying to change him, but I've seen him over the top. Indiana sports is a little bit different than, you know, rooting for your local, you know, pro team. It just runs a little bit deep. And then to have a season like this and all the time and effort and money, I mean, loved it, but what he invested going to 2 bowl games, you know, that's a pretty big financial and emotional investment to have it screwed up because Miami goes down the field and scores a touchdown in a game that they were behind in all the way. So, but it was just, the whole thing was great. And then they had on Saturday, they had this incredible ceremony at the stadium where they had more people than they used to have for football games.
Oh, yeah.
And they gave the Heisman and the championship trophy, and Cignetti spoke. It was really nice, really nice thing.
Andy, when he has to make a resolution to not get so crazy, and it's at his wife's behest, she is trying to change him.
No, I think they were scaring the dog. They have this little dog, and the dog would run into the room, run out of the room when he'd go crazy. So.
And Andy, all of us married men, we're all fixer-upper projects for our lives. Like everyone else, not that. Yeah. Did you see, regarding the championship game, the most insane galaxy-brained idiot take by Dan Le Batard?
No, I did not. What did he say?
You're looking at Le Batard here. Now, Le Batard is a Miami guy.
Graduate.
He's a graduate of Miami U, of the U, right?
Yep.
I can't believe you haven't heard this yet. Here we go.
Everything about Mendoza is both sincere and sweet. And yet, when he jumped into the end zone there and extended the ball, I'm like, wildly unnecessary. He could have just run in. He did that because he knew the size of the moment. Yes, I didn't think it was necessary.
He knew, oh, this is dramatic. Yes. I've got to extend the ball.
Back to that's crazy.
I'm not exactly sure he knew where other players were.
That is
so
right.
He was just like kind of blindly insane. Like, I'm going to put all of my 6 foot high frame into this.
Yeah. That's nuts.
I understand why, because it was like extra dramatic. But he got spun around like a couple of times.
That guy, you think that guy is like, ah, flair for the dramatic. I've got to extend.
Not only, Jeremy, do I believe that, because I believe he knew he was going to get in, but the other way looks more theatrical and wonderful. I'm not even criticizing him for it. I'm simply saying that part, he was giving you a little extra. It was not necessary because he knew the size of the moment.
Man,
Andy, come get your boy. Come get your boy, because I know you like Le Batard.
I do. I do like Dan. That's a little much, but that's fandom showing. You know, it's like a pitcher gives up a home run and he doesn't like the home run trot that the guy had. I think that's really what that was about.
No, it was okay. If that's what he really thinks. Boy, he's got to recalibrate his sports fandom, because he needed to dive to make sure he got in. He was getting rattled around. He wasn't thinking about doing it in any way that had any kind of flair.
And he wanted to make sure the ball didn't get knocked out. Do you know that team went 16-0 and had one fumble the whole season? And that was in the first game in a blowout of some, you know, small school. I forget what it was. But that's amazing.
I need to be that guy, though, for a second. It was one fumble lost.
Yeah.
That fumbles that they...
Oh, right. Yeah, one fumble lost.
And that's sort of a pet peeve of mine. I don't believe that fumbles and fumbles lost should be a separate category. I think fumbles, period, should be the only category, because I think once the ball is on the ground, it's up to the gods as to where it goes. It's an oblong, pointy-ended thing. Who knows? There's no real skill. There's no real technique to recovering a fumble. It's pure luck. So to me, it's how many times did you put the ball on the ground should be the only thing that matters. But yeah, it's a hell of a stat for sure. Okay,
yeah, he did fumble in the Oregon game, but the center was very heady down the field, recovered it. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, ending on this, there was reports this weekend that the small contingent of writers for the Washington Post, the paper of record here, the paper that you and I grew up with and loved very much, that their small contingent going to the Olympic Games in Italy were told, we're not going, even though they had hotels, airfare, transportation, and more all lined up. This is part of what could be even more massive layoffs coming to the Washington Post as they hemorrhage money under the billionaire Jeff Bezos, the third richest man in the world.
Yeah. Well, what I saw was they had already spent $80,000 on hotel rooms. They did have 12 credentials. So we're planning to send 12 people to cover. I'm sure that's fewer than they used to.
Right. Still, they used to send 36, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, I remember when the Bears played in the Super Bowl against the Patriots in 86, the Chicago Tribune sent 23 people to cover that game. That's when, that's a long time ago when newspapers were much bigger. But yeah, it's what they're facing, and it's very sad. And Olympic coverage is something that's important, I think. And it always has been to the Post. I have been invited to a party at Christine Brennan's very nice apartment, in which she informed the guests that Tanya and Nancy helped to pay for that. So
the book she wrote, or coverage?
Yeah, she wrote
them.
A book about it. Yeah, she covered it for the Post and then wrote a book about it, and has done, you know, a lot of work on. She's probably one of the most preeminent journalists for the Olympics ever. She's no longer working at the Post; hasn't worked there in many years. But that's terrible.
Right, but it was a story that was so crazy. It was a once in a lifetime story that you can't, like, you, for anyone who doesn't even know the story, because the new generation coming up, they may or may not know the full scope. When you tell them about it, I don't think they would believe. They're like, what?
Well, they made a movie about it. A couple of movies.
With Margot Robbie, who was pretty good. White trash Tonya Harding. But so the other word is that the rumor inside the Post is that the sports desk could go entirely.
Right. Well, the New York Times did it. They bought the Athletic, so they used that. But I don't know how newspapers, their backbone used to be classified advertising. So once that went away, it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, classified. It was like $120 for three lines. You'd try to sell a couch in the classifieds, but it was the only place you could sell a couch. Or Redskin tickets, or an old Honda Civic, and it was straight cash to the newspaper.
Oh no, my father owns apartments, and that was part of the yearly budget, was newspaper advertising.
Yeah, list apartments in the Tom Boswell, Sally Jenkins, Tony Kornheiser, Mike Wilbon, Mike Wise, Rick Riley, Jane Levy, Dan Steinberg, Michael Lee, Ken Denlinger, John Feinstein, Dave Kindred, Liz Clark, Shirley Povich, Leonard Shapiro, Richard Justice, J.A. Adonde, Steve Weiss, Rick Bucher, George Solomon, Stephen Goff, David Aldridge, Candace Buckner, Chelsea James, Barry Sferluga, Gene Wong, Jerry Brewer, Andy Beyer. Damn. Yeah. Andy.
They don't even cover local basketball games anymore. You know, they can't even send a reporter to College Park. It's a changing world.
Well, luckily they didn't send anyone to see the Terps get their doors blown off by 43 to Michigan State. Yeah. That's another topic for another day. Andy, you go to bed, sleep in. It's a rare missed day for you, not due to health nor lack of work ethic, simply the drive on still snow-covered streets in the DMV.
Yeah, it's
we'll see you next week. Thanks, bud.
Too risky. Have a good one. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Take care. See you.
The world's all right with me.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets, or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.